irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Sam in the Morning, only on LA Talk Radio.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the show. Today is Tuesday, October 22nd. We're back with you after a three-day weekend. I was not here yesterday because I could just sleep in, so I did. And today we're going to have a great show for you. Fires in L.A. once again, and this time where all the richest people live in the Palisades. So, but it's still painful to see all those houses go up in smoke. And And when you watch the firemen or the firefighters just, you know, with their hoses and the water, you go, they're not even putting a dent on this, you know. So what you get is, but the airplanes and the choppers, they really do a great job, you know. And then on the ground, it's tough. I don't know how they do it, you know. Also, the Patriots, once again, are looking like the champions once again. It's become, the NFL has become boring because it's the same every year, you know, so I don't know what's going on. We do have a couple of great guests in the studio, and I'm going to bring them on just now. And we're not doing Facebook Live because they didn't want to. So you guys can only imagine what they look like, and we'll take some pictures. You can see those.
We're reptiles.
Exactly. But they seem like very nice people to me. We're joined by Julio Ramos and Lucas Mireles. Okay, I'm like looking for the names all over the place here. Because what happens is, you know, we get so many guests that the following day I already forget the name. So here it took me 2 minutes. I already forgot them, you know.
It's all good.
But yeah, I mean, I'm getting old, you know, so that's the thing. Plus, I did have a stroke a couple weeks ago.
What?
Yeah, and I'm alive and well, as you can see. You know?
You're on the radio.
I discontinued all the bad things I was doing, like smoking and things like that. So after that, so now people are telling me I'm looking better, I'm feeling better.
Well, you look good.
So that's good. Thank you. But and thankfully, I mean, I can use that as an excuse for being forgetful, but that's not it. It's just because I smoked weed for so many years.
I don't know, man. That's incredible feat of what's going on right now. And, yeah, right? I don't think it was from smoking weed. It might have been other things. Don't get on that bandwagon.
The forgetfulness? I don't know, man. I've smoked for way too many years. But whatever, you know. Gotcha. I mean, it's fine. Yeah. Also getting old, you know. And I'm going to be 60 next year, you know.
Oh, really?
So I'm getting up there, you
Congratulations.
Know.
Congratulations.
Thank you. I can use excuses like that. You know,
I think you can. You can say anything.
Are you from Los Angeles?
I was actually born in Israel.
Okay.
I grew up there for 16 years and then I moved here. So okay. I've been here, 45 years or so.
That's
a long time.
That is a long time. Yeah.
What about you guys? Are you visiting or do you live here?
Well, visiting. No, I think, I'm from Peru.
Oh,
I'm from Peru.
Okay.
I came here for my master's in film, went to UCLA.
How long ago was that?
That was 2008.
Okay, so about 11 years ago.
Yeah.
Wow, mm-hmm. Very cool. So you came here and you were admitted to UCLA. You must have been a pretty good student in high school, right?
Oh, yes, right. Filmmakers are known to be good students in high school. Yes.
So, I mean, but how do you qualify to UCLA? You've got to do something, right?
Well, I don't know. To be honest, I think they are good in the sense that they're looking for storytellers. So I had a lot of stories to say, you know, to tell.
I see.
So, yeah.
So you moved here back then and you've lived here ever since.
Yes.
Awesome. Mm-hmm. And so you knew early on you wanted to make movies and stuff, right?
Yeah, since I was probably 15.
Oh, wow.
Yes.
Very cool.
Yes. I had a passion for telling stories, you know.
Right. Did you come here by yourself?
No. My father was he lived here a few years
before
I arrived.
Okay, good.
Yeah, but he lived in Chicago, in the area of Chicago, and that's where I lived for a couple of years.
For a couple of years, and he came here.
And then I came to Los Angeles.
Yeah, well, this is where you make films. Yes. What about you, Lucas? Do you live here too?
I live here now, yes.
Okay, and where did you move from?
I moved from Texas. I'm originally from Texas.
Oh,
South
really?
Texas. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Where in Texas? What?
Well, I was born in Uvalde, which is in West Texas, and then I was raised in Pearsall, Texas, in the south part.
Okay, so, I'll pretend I've heard of it, but yeah, well, never have.
Yeah, well, George Strait is from Pearsall, Texas. If you know where George Strait is, a great country singer. Matthew McConaughey is from Uvalde, and then I grew up. I kicked around all of Texas because I love it so much, and then I came out here to do filmmaking. We met in the UCLA MFA program for directing.
Oh, really?
Yeah,
so that's how you guys met.
Yeah, that's how we got to know each other, and you know, I got here the same time he did, and I think he got out a lot sooner than I did. I kind of kicked around, still making films or whatnot, and then we've been out working, and then we started collaborating, been great. Yeah, we've been friends
Very
ever
cool.
since. So.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, and were you a good student in high school? I mean, you had to, right? I mean, to get into UCLA. Come on.
You had to be good. You know, you had to be good.
He's being modest, but I mean,
you have to just show up. Just show up. Know how to spell your name.
Don't fall asleep.
Yeah, you can get the date wrong. It's fine.
So you say in filmmaking, it's not that challenging, right?
No. Filmmaking is challenging.
It's really challenging.
Getting into the school is done. Okay.
Well, I mean, it was really challenging to get in, but just like he said, UCLA actually focuses on whether you can tell stories or not.
Ah.
And when I grew up, my dad was always, he held court all the time. He'd tell big stories and we'd love him. And I don't know if he just got bored, and he would just get us out of school.
Uh-huh.
And he'd be like, come down to the principal's office, and we'd come down, me and my brother, and then he would just take us to San Antonio, and then we would go watch movies for the day. And it was just big impact on me. And so it was wonderful to see how – I didn't know I wanted to be a filmmaker till later on, and that was just because I didn't know how to tell stories.
Right.
I didn't know what I was going to do. I just knew I had to do that.
Right. Yeah. Uh-huh. I mean, I can understand, you know, loving to make movies or wanting to make movies actually because, you know, we grow with them and everything, and you feel it touches you in a way, you know. Very cool. So so you guys were, like, destined to meet each other because, you know, I mean, you're still making movies together, and you met – at the same time, so obviously not a coincidence, you know? I mean, it had to happen that way. So you came out at about the same time as he did?
Yeah, we were in the same class.
Oh,
the same year, and we went through it, through the whole thing together, yeah.
So you became friends and everything, right?
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
And so, cool, and you've lived in L.A. since then, both of you, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so it's home for you here.
Absolutely.
Do you guys like it here, or are you just here because you have to be the business?
I love it. Yeah, it's so much to do around here, you know, not just filmmaking, but just look at the site.
Beautiful. Beautiful land, I know. And you?
That's a little of both for me. I miss Texas with all my heart.
Do you really?
It's a beautiful state. All my family's there, of course, and it's got the best barbecue in the world, and it's got the best beer in the world. It's got a lot of best of everything's in the world.
Yeah,
maybe that kind of contributes to the size of myself at this point, but I love going back to the people are wonderful, and I miss it a lot. What I don't miss about Texas and what I love about California, it's a beautiful weather all the time.
Right.
You know, and there's beautiful people here. It's where I'm with my girlfriend here, and she's wonderful. Yeah, so like I've put down a little bit of roots here, which is great. It really helps with it.
Right.
And all my
you
friends,
like the package.
Yeah, and like all of our friends here that are still from UCLA that we know are mostly in LA. And they have their own roots, so it's a community that we kind of come up through, and it's feeling good. It can feel like there's a lot of strangers everywhere, but it's really nice to have these connections, you know.
Right. So, do you guys feel you're part of the film community now? I mean, you've done enough here to feel that you belong. Right? Or no?
I think we're part of the film community. Maybe not part of the industry just yet. Maybe different parts of the industry. We do other things and to make ends meet. We do filmmaking to make ends meet, but we wish we were like on the next Marvel film. But
You will be. You know, I mean, so the reason you're here, you made a short film called Debris, Desecho in Spanish. And we'll, of course, talk about the movie and everything. Uh-huh. I just wanted to introduce that. And that's it's an Oscar-qualified film.
Uh-huh.
So you guys will most likely be selected, right, or nominated? I'm saying that because you're associated with Catherine, and Catherine is always associated with Oscar-nominated films, you know?
Well, she's fantastic, for one.
Right.
She handles so much, and she has a superpower, or she has multiple superpowers, and it's really interesting when we met with her, the way that she was just so behind the film. It was really great to know, and we always try to, I think we try to keep ourselves pretty down to earth. We're just very happy to be in the position we are, and we'll be happy if we get anything.
You know that's true. You know, I mean, you like to get the recognition, but you make the film because you feel you have to, you want to, right?
Yeah. And what's been great so far is just the audience response when we take it to film festivals. We've been to a lot already. You know, that people who watch the film, first of all, they're shocked and they're always asking, is this real? Is this really actually happening? So it's very provocative, the film. Yeah. And I think that's a good discovery that we had when screening it for an audience. Now we're this far. You know, this is 2 years after we premiered the film, and getting to know people like Catherine, you know, who is working.
Also, it's been around for 2 years already, huh? Now you're really pushing it and everything. So that's pretty cool. How long is the film?
It's 14 minutes.
14 minutes.
Yeah.
And you know, I mean, I've spoken to several people who have made short films and realized it's pretty challenging to tell a story in such a short time, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So now, who wrote the film? Did you both write it together?
Yes.
And how does that work? I mean, do you have to physically be together at all times? Or does someone write a certain part and then the other one comes in and continues it? How does it work?
It could really start in many different places and times, but I think we came up with the idea of construction workers, and we talked about like what happens to an illegal immigrant who is working in this construction site. What happens if that person gets injured? You know, can you take it to the hospital? Well, you don't have papers, you know,
right?
You cannot really take care of it. There's no health insurance. So we started like talking about these different scenarios for this person. What happens to them? Do they just leave him, just drop him somewhere, let him to die? So
How did the idea come about? It just came to you, or you were reading something and you started realizing that?
Well, I'm an immigrant myself, you know, and I'm always looking, or I'm always intrigued by immigrant tales.
Right.
And this particular one comes from something that I witnessed at a construction site. A friend of mine, who actually lives here in Sherman Oaks, the nice area over there, she was remodeling her house for a lot of money, hired a construction company. One of those days, she got a note on her door in Spanglish saying, "Miss, we haven't gotten paid because the contractor says that you haven't deposited the money. I came to work on that day, and I was wondering if you can pay me."
They're helpless, right?
They're helpless in many ways, and also, you know, here is a person who hires a construction company, you know, and you have workers that come to you, you know, when they're supposed to come to the contractor. So I called a guy, you know, and we spoke in Spanish, nice guy, and indeed, you know, he was there for 1 or 2 days and didn't get paid. And so my friend called the contractor, and they say they will take care of it. And after that, we didn't hear a word. After further research, I just stumbled into labor trafficking, right? Which is something that is super common here in Los Angeles.
Labor trafficking, right?
Yes.
We don't hear about that too much. We hear about sex trafficking and child trafficking. Mm-hmm. So what does that mean?
Labor trafficking is when people from underdeveloped countries are lured to come to America under false pretenses of papers, work.
So people tell them that this is what you can do, right?
Yeah. I'm going to bring you over to America, and then this is what you can get. Mm. And the second they come here, situation is completely different, right? They are basically confined into a place. They're driven from point A to point B, and they work long hours, and they get paid little to no money, right? They're told you cannot talk to anyone because you are breaking the law, you're a criminal, you know, we can put you in jail, or we
But they only tell them that after they come here.
After they come, yeah.
Oh, okay, so it's all like stories of paradise and all that stuff. And then
and
they
what's
come
worse
here,
about it is the fact that the way they get them is that it says, you know, I pay for your transportation, for your living, for this, for that, so therefore you owe me about $15,000, $20,000. you have to work this much in order for you to pay me back.
Right.
So, and if you run away, we're going to get you. Or we're going to get your family in Mexico. We know where they live. Like, no, it's really
so silly. You're dealing like with the mafia, you know, in a way. You know, they do something for you, then you got to do something for them. And if you don't, they go after your family. Yeah.
Exactly, exactly. Yeah. So we were thinking about this film, you know, in terms of like, okay, so if we have this situation, a construction worker falls or something happens, he gets injured, incapacitated, what does the trafficker do, you know, how do they maximize their investment? And that's how we're coming up with like the most horrific scenarios
right
for this film.
Now we know that happens a lot in LA. Does it happen in Texas too, since it's on the border and everything? A lot of migrants there, right?
Yes.
Coming into Texas.
There's lots of illegal immigrants and there's a lot of the same things that can happen. I came at it from, I was in a very small town. I was about 6,000-7,000 people. And so a lot of my stuff, when I would interact with illegals, it was because they'd be walking across the pasture. Like, oh, they're heading north. They're heading up north here. And or they come, they ask for water, and, you know, you give them water because they're walking around in the desert. Those people are willingly coming here for some. And now how they got here through coyotes or whatever, that all kind of, at the time, I didn't quite understand how they get here. You know,
right,
what I mean?
Right.
I mean, it gets explained to you in a way, but you just don't understand why people are walking in the middle of wherever they are and where they're going. So it has to happen. It happens all over the United States. This is an issue that kind of, like labor trafficking in general, is actually a global issue. It happens in China, happens in Europe, happens everywhere.
Right.
And so it's just like we were very interested in this specific kind of thing, because one time me and Julie were talking about it. Like we were talking earlier right off air how all these beautiful houses here in LA, you know, all these houses are so beautiful and they cost so much money, and then you go around and you see these construction sites and you see people that are working in them, and you see that they're probably immigrants, and you don't know where they come from. They come from all over, not just Mexico, but South America and everywhere. So, you know, you get to thinking, like, where do these people go at night? Like, what happened? Are they actually here? Are they legal? Are they illegal? But actually, what's their story? What happens to them when things happen? Like, you know, you can go to anywhere else and like something bad happens, you know, ambulances are called, things like that. But if something happens on these kinds of sites run by certain kinds of people, what happens to these? What happens to them?
That's true. Like, where do they live?
What are their conditions? Why are they here? How are they? You know, it is a form of modern slavery.
Yeah,
it's a very clear form of that. And the people that run it and the people that are privy to it are making a profit. That's the only way it works. So it was very interesting to dive into that and to kind of show just that minutia, like this, that little nuance of that area. And there's a world that's bigger than we really think about it,
right,
especially when you're just dealing with humans.
Right.
You know, they think of them more as cattle. You think of them more as like, what's going to make me money and what can I maximize?
Right. Yeah, because most people are not aware of that situation.
Yeah.
So you guys thought you were going to bring it to the masses in the form of a film.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's a fictional film, but it deals with a very real topic.
Yeah, it's based on a lot of true events and things that you can find a lot of interesting inspirations. And I honestly don't think it's far-fetched at all.
Yeah, so it's realistic.
It's just shocking more than anything.
Right. Mm-hmm. So what is this... So you both wrote it, right? And you both, did you both direct it too?
No, Julio directed it.
And okay.
He let me every now and again go whisper some words to one of their actors because, you know, they're a friend of mine. But I helped produce it and we were there together. It was a really interesting collaboration.
Great. So the production of it, what was involved in that? What are some of the things you had to do?
Well, we had to go get a house.
Right.
So we went to Cheviot Hills and we got a nice house out there. We rented it and we shot out there for 3 days, we also put. Actually, the biggest thing we got to do was while we were developing the script, was find a good cast. And one of the great people that we got a hold of, Julio got a hold of, was a wonderful, amazing actor named Tenoch Huerta, and he's an amazing Mexican actor. And we had seen him in a film a while back. Me and Julio together were at the Berlin Alley Talent Campus in Berlin. In 2014. So we were there and we saw this film on a lark called Hueros, and it was just, and it starred this guy, and we saw him, I was like, this is amazing. And the guy was Tenoch Huerta, and then a couple years later I was like, we could just make a film with him.
Right.
Got a hold of him. He's been making some things. Now he's out. He's in the new Narcos. He's in a bunch of things. Like, he's blowing up in a sense. He agreed to come do the film. And that kind
so
of
that was
like
a great get for you. Absolutely. I mean, yeah, wow. Mm-hmm. So I know I've seen a couple of stills of the film. It looks pretty intense, you know. I haven't gotten a chance to see it yet. But when people want to see this, how do they see this? They have to go to a festival, right?
Yes. So far, it's been all festival distribution, and it's been in many places already. And hopefully, we are going to have it available online
Pretty
soon.
Yeah. Right. So, do these streaming services, do they take short films like Netflix and Amazon Prime?
Yeah, HBO, Amazon Prime. They'll all take, depending on where they've been, the subject matter, things like that, and you know, we're not going to say anything just yet, but like we're hoping that we'll be able to announce something really soon. So
why not? I mean, yeah for sure, and because I think there is a market for short films. You know, it's just that people don't go just to watch 15 minutes of it, so they have to go and watch several films at the same time and this sort of thing. So, but it's good. Now you have different ways to distribute the films, right? Mm-hmm. Like all the streaming services and everything. So it's a lot easier to get to the audience and stuff.
We have a distributor company based in France, and they've been good.
Really?
Yes, putting the film out there.
So is there interest in Europe in the film as well?
Yeah, Europe and Latin America, especially. Yes, so that's a good thing about this film. I think it has a universal theme, you know, and I think it's able to cross bridges. So it's played really well here in the U.S. as well as in Europe and Latin America.
Right. Mm-hmm. Now, you mentioned a form of slavery, but... But there is a difference, right? I mean, the person does have a choice of whether they come here or not, right? They just don't know what's going to happen to them once they're here.
Exactly.
Yeah. Right.
They're promised the American dream.
Right. You know? So it's not like they're forced, but they're given dreams and then they get exploited.
Yeah. And then they're coerced into staying.
Yeah. Right.
But there's a very distinguishing point. Like, yes, of course, they didn't. People who come here, you know, they choose to come here, right? But there's something to be said as well. It's like being forced to come here and also being tricked to come here and then being forced to stay in your scenario.
Right.
So I think they're both, I mean, of course, you know, it is a form, to me, it's really just a form of trapping someone psychologically, financially, and physically in a place where they cannot really leave. And they feel like there's nothing left, and they're literally just working until they die.
Right.
And so,
it's a desperate situation. I mean, they don't really have a choice, right?
In a lot of cases, it seems as though they don't.
Right.
And I mean, of course, you see people. There are situations where you can get in and out of these things, but I can imagine things that I haven't witnessed. That just seem to be that could be not far from the truth.
Right.
Really, honestly. So.
Right. Wow. So, yeah, I guess, you know, when you come here and they threaten your, you know, your well-being or your family and stuff, what do you do, you know?
Yeah.
So now, do they get to keep any of the money? I mean, do they get to send their family some money or anything?
So this is the thing, right? Because I don't think there is a rule book for labor trafficking.
Right.
So the biggest problem here is, like, why? How can this happen in a country like America?
Right.
In a nation driven by the law, right? The answer is very simple.
Right.
The answer is very simple. I think in this country, we are obsessed with cheap labor, right? And there are no laws that punish the corporations, the companies, you know. Instead, they punish and they demonize the immigrants.
I see.
Right. So that's why the immigrants, when they are here, they even when they are far away in their countries, they are thinking, I am going to be a criminal the second I go to America.
So they know that, right? I mean, they know that coming
in a way, they know that they are supposed to feel less than what they are, you know, just for coming to America, just for being from somewhere else.
Right.
So, and they should be thankful to get an opportunity to be here, right? So with that in their heads, think about it. You know, it's not far-fetched to just manipulate somebody into, like, you know, coming here in the first place and then making them stay here,
right?
So, again, laws, you know, they don't really punish companies who hire illegal immigrants, and that's a big problem. You know,
right.
They prosecute that.
But I thought they do now. No, I mean,
there are laws to do it, but I think really the sentiment is that maybe they're not strong enough.
Right.
And really, the rhetoric is about.
And they probably go after big companies, but not about the small ones that can. Yeah. You know, they go under the radar and.
Yeah, there's a lot. I mean, I know there's lots of stuff. I mean, and we're generalizing in a way, like just the idea of it, but yeah, there are laws that to kind of deter that. But if the bottom dollar is, if you're going to make a lot more money, and you can take the hit. That's why you get these big corporations doing payouts. Like they'll pay $2.5 billion if they can keep polluting the skies because they're going to make $45 billion. You know what I mean?
So to them,
it's just numbers. It's like, okay, well, yeah, we'll lose a couple months on this, but then we'll just pick it back up. But I also want to make a distinction too. We're not saying that all immigration here and all illegal workers are trapped in a working capacity that they can't get out of. Mm-hmm. This is a very specific subset of people. I've known plenty of people, wonderful immigrant workers that come here and work hard and move and have like, you know, they move with the crops, they move with the seasons, and those are hardworking people that are here trying to make a decent life for themselves. But we like I said, this kind of came up into effect of like the, you know, when we see in this opulent, you know, neighborhood these beautiful homes being built, you know, this kind of perverse idea of people being stuck in there, like the people that build your dream house. Are having a nightmare,
and that
could be a little chilling, especially if that your dream in itself is someone else like being tortured.
That's a pretty pretty sad situation, I would say, to be doing this. But that's what I was going to bring up: is not all illegal immigrants are like that, right? I mean, many people just come on their own; they're hoping for dreams, whatever, and they come here and they get mistreated and everything. But I guess in a way, you know, it's going to happen because you come in here illegally, right? I mean,
people they don't have any rights.
Yeah, exactly. You know, you're breaking the law essentially. Mm-hmm. But you're focusing more on the trafficking part of it, on the part where from the beginning until the end. They're sort of controlled by these by these groups. Are they like gangs?
It's really subtle, you know, subtle. And the movie is literally in a construction site in a house, in a beautiful home. A worker just get injured, and you see the foreman, who is also an immigrant, you know, trying to save him in the most unpeculiar way.
Yeah.
So. And you don't know why. You just start to understand why they are in a rush. Why can't you take him to the hospital? You start asking this question. Why can't you just get some medical assistance? And then those questions are answered at the end.
So you're asking really a lot of questions about the situation.
Yeah.
Wow.
And it's a thriller. It's action. It's a lot of action. It's 14 minutes. And it's literally about dealing with this man who got injured in the working
place. Right. What kind of a cast did you have? How many people approximately did you have as far as the cast?
So we had five total, right? No, five or six. And Karen Kangoulian, like he's amazing. He's been in a lot of Sean Baker's films. He's an amazing actor. Like I said before, Tenochtitlan, we had a wonderful New York actor, friend of mine named Jorge Diaz. He does a lot of Spanish theater. Ibrahim and Hansel.
And Danier.
And Danier. And all of them, it was an interesting casting process. Like, we got a couple of them right off the bat, and then we put out some casting notices, and they obviously rose to the top. They were fantastic. And they've gone on to do some great things, and they're continuing to do it. And I think they're actually some more surprised when we reach out, like, hey, we're playing here. You want to come out? And they're like, it's still going on. So
yeah, right.
It's really nice to get that. Yeah. And, you know, and what's really, like, just to echo what Julio said earlier, is that it is interesting to hear when you're in a room and it's been a while when the film's been playing and everyone still reacts to the things that happen in it. You know, sometimes you see it a lot. You're like, okay, here it comes. But then everyone's just, like you hear these visceral feelings from people in the audience. We're not trying to gross people out or anything like that. There are just things that happen and we try to make it as true to life as we can with the budget provided.
Right. Now, was this film in Spanish with subtitles, or is it in English?
Oh, man, we got a lot of languages.
Yeah, there are three languages.
Oh,
three
really?
Languages. Yeah.
Get a little closer to the mic.
We should clarify that all cast members are supposed to play international parts. You know, they're all either from Mexico or the other ones are Russian speakers. So we made a point of just making a tale of immigrants only, you know, where you get both sides of the spectrum. And so, the workers speak in Spanish And then the contractor side, they speak in Russian.
In Russian.
Yeah, and they talk to each other in English.
Right.
And they talk to each other in English.
Yeah,
yes.
So. Oh, I see. Okay. Yes, yeah. Because they're in America. They exactly, have the common language and everything. Wow.
Yeah.
So it's like a whole thing happening between Russians and Hispanics.
Uh-huh.
And nobody knows what the hell's going on, you know. And they're both probably doing illegal things, you know, in this foreign country.
It's very strategic. The language we found, I think we enjoy using it as a strategy, and it's a way to be able to communicate with people, when, you know, your feelings and what you intend to, without getting, you know, it's just your way of secret coding yourself out of certain situations. So you're doing that on both ends, it's kind of like playing poker a bit. You don't really know what everyone's saying. You don't really know what everyone's intending. So it's fun to run in those, not just a translation, but to get to see how people are really feeling. So,
right.
Yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm. So and then you have the woman, right, that hired the workers or no?
No, so that was just based on that story.
Oh, right? That story. No, okay. Yeah. So not a new story.
There was in some of draft of the script.
Yes, there was.
In early version, there was a woman.
Yeah, you're keying on something. Yeah.
Yeah, you're right. But we took it out. We just kept it about, again, the situation, right? Like the accident.
I see.
Yes.
Okay. Wow.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So now does it. Oh, well, I don't want to get too much into the film, because in the short film, you pretty much talk about the content, you give away the whole film, you know?
But I'll tell you this, though. The reason, you talked really earlier about why people make short films, right? Well, people make short films. I mean, there are people that can do wonderful things in short forms, and that's amazing. Mostly people make short films because they can't afford to make a feature film. And so, and one of these things is like, well, me and Julio we've made a lot of short films in film school and afterwards and working and things like that. But this was an opportunity. We wanted to make something. We initially wanted to make this a bigger film right out the gate. And
really?
And there was a time when the short wasn't going to happen. And we were just like, oh, man, let's just move forward. Let's just keep going and try to make a feature. And then it kind of came back into fold, and we're happy we made it. But suffice it to say, this is a proof of concept for a bigger film that dives into these worlds that we're talking about, dives deeper into the situations of getting people over, dives deeper into the world of who manages, who brings these people together, who lures immigrants over, who sells them, who trade. Like, there's a lot to this world. It's very thick and whatnot. So it's a very interesting, it's very, I don't know, it's a very diverse world. And the characters in it are very, I don't know, they're very thick.
it's been a long process. It's been we're still working on it.
Yeah.
We still have to finish another two drafts or not. But yeah, we're getting there. It's been fun though. It's been fun to actually just explore these worlds, especially in a metropolis like Los Angeles.
Right. And I'm thinking, you know, that this is a way to really, I mean, yeah, because I'm thinking about this. It's like we don't really think about the stories behind the people that we see all the time. You know, I mean, we have so many immigrants here, whether legal or illegal, and they don't get, you know, we don't really know what their stories
are.
We
don't give them voice. I think that's a big issue. You're totally right. And we're hoping to do trafficking itself, you know. So even though the film does take place in a construction site, you know, labor trafficking could be anywhere, really, you know, because think about the person who brings water to your restaurant, in your favorite restaurant, or think about the apple that is sitting in your table right now.
Right, working on the fields, in the fields
and
everything. Yeah,
so
the strawberries, and you see so many.
And you start realizing that your relationship with labor trafficking is a lot closer than you think.
Yeah, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So now when they bring people together, and you mentioned coyotes and all that, right? How many people do they bring, like, in one group? I mean, like...
I don't know. I mean, that's...
Different.
I mean...
It's different, right?
But, yeah, I mean, we can...
But, I mean, the people among themselves, don't they start talking and say, well, maybe we can escape, maybe we can do this?
But, I mean, think about it. If you're in a group of possibly 20 other complete strangers, or maybe, you know, one or two people, and you paid money... hard cash to get from point A to point B. And when you're going to get to point B, you got to call a number, or you're going to see a relative or whatever. There's a lot of promises, and there's a lot of successful stories.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously people come here. I mean, it is a journey that people take and complete and are thriving. Right. So it's not like everyone gets tricked or everyone just gets left out in the desert. So, I mean, I'm not an expert to be talking about it, other than the fact that you know, living in an area where an immigrant could walk by and you would have like a broken conversation in Spanish. And my dad would speak Spanish to them, and he's very fair skinned, so it was very interesting to see the dynamic between them, you know what I mean, and figure out where they were going, making sure that they were all right, and making sure that they didn't go this way to get, because that'll there's nothing that way, make sure you go this way, looking at a map that's hand drawn, and you know, there's like so many things that people will just walk out and do, and right.
Just to be able to make a decent living, right?
Yeah, or get away from their lives
in danger,
yeah.
And
yeah.
Yeah, wow.
Yeah, the person who works as a handyman in the complex, in the apartment complex I live, he's a really nice guy, and we're friends, and he was telling me in confidence, I don't know if I should say this, but he himself, you know, paid a coyote to bring him to America. No, actually, he didn't pay. Somebody was going to pay for him when he arrives, you know, but that person never delivered the money. So he was stuck in the house of the coyote, you know, and they were getting anxious because they were not seeing the money. And he couldn't hear what they were talking about, but he sensed that he was in danger. So when he was driven to the desert for no good reason, that's when he just escaped.
He escaped, yeah.
He escaped, yes. Wow. So that's just one of million of his stories.
Right.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. It's very interesting, you know, because it's very relevant to what's going on. You know, I mean, people still trying to get in, mm-hmm. and all that stuff. But you know, it makes sense though in a way, because a country can't take an unlimited number of immigrants, mm-hmm, right? Mm-hmm. And so what is the answer for this? What can we do, mm-hmm, to alleviate that situation?
You know, man, you know, that's such a complex question and doesn't have an easy answer. I mean, that would have to be left to an expert, that stuff. But like, just in general, I think there are forms of formal immigration that can be done, and there could be more compassion. I think there just could be more compassion and love, and there could be a lot more communication involved with a lot of these things, and education, really. Mm-hmm. I think a lot of the stereotypes of immigrants coming across are that, oh, my neighborhood, there goes the neighborhood. This is, you know, like, oh, I can, they're gonna go to school with my children, they're gonna bring down our there's like a lot of these things that are happening. I mean, one, you know, that's some of a thousand, you know, complaints. Mm-hmm. And you know, that's a lot of unfounded stuff, man. I don't know. It's hard to politics.
Yeah, it's a mixed, a lot of mixed emotions about that, you know.
It's very complex, for sure. Yeah. One thing that you could do is make investment in those countries where people are running away from, you know.
Right.
Support their wars or wars against crime, you know, drugs. And also do not, when you bring an American company to this third world countries, you know, is like play a fair game with a market in there. You know, if for example a burger costs X amount of money in America and it's the same price in this Latin American country, that doesn't make sense. Who pays for that? Right. You know, only the higher class in Latin America who can pay for that, right? And then, but the workers in there, they're getting paid the minimal salary of the land. You know,
right? Yeah, so they have a lot less money to buy items that cost the same as
exactly,
in America.
Yeah. But the price of the burger in Latin America is the same as the price in America,
even though they get paid.
It makes no sense.
Yeah,
right?
Less.
But don't you think if the company wanted to make money, they would figure that we can sell more hamburgers if we make them for less money?
Right.
Right.
I mean, of course, you know, it's like there are waves and things change, you know. But I'm just recalling a big corporation burger food chain fast food restaurants in Peru where it was a luxury to go to these fast food restaurants, you know, and today is not anymore. And that's what I'm saying, you know, like things change, and there are other ways for capitalists to actually go into these countries and invest and in a way get the best and then leave, you know. And that's a problem.
Right.
It's something that probably we do a lot in America. We just go into a place, we take what we need, and we leave. You know?
Right?
Yes.
Wow. Yeah, that's it's a grim situation, you know. But So now the film, how long did it take you guys to make the film since, let's say it was written and then to film and produce and do post-production and all that?
Yeah, production only took 3 days. We prepped the house for 2 days. Mm-hmm. Pre-production.
So you have to work fast, right? I mean.
really fast, you know. And that's why, you know, having this amazing thing with Lucas and then other friends from UCLA, including the cinematographer and the production designer, put the team together, you know, again, and we pull it off. You know, it was such a fun, even though it was chaotic and fast, like you said, it was so much fun. But so after we wrote the script, we had to take a pause before we actually produced it, because we were, again, you know, we were waiting for the availabilities of our actors. So we had to like schedule the film around the actors. And that itself took about 6 months, you know, trying to figure it out schedule. Yes.
We're both working full time at this point too, as well. So we're both working in, you know, different capacities, you know. So it is a thing that you know, if you can't do full time all the time, it was something that even though it was protracted, we were staying on it a lot more. And as soon as we got actors involved, it became a lot more solidified. We're like, oh great, now we have a real reason to kind of make this film. Like not a real reason, but like now we have a real gumption to do it, because it's like, well, now we got a plane ticket with somebody showing up, so we better get things prepared. So you know, it was really interesting. And then the writing process went through, even through production, we were writing.
You kept
and
writing and rewriting,
and then
stuff.
You find wonderful things on set, and they would find some interesting things, and so we'd incorporate them into the script, and just, you know, every day I think we would talk about it, and then I would kind of take the night shift because I wanted him to be sure that he could focus on set. So we would talk about it all through the day, see the dailies, and then get dinner, talk about the script, block it out a little bit more, and then I'd go home and write all night and come back and give him a script, and then he'd read it. Wow. Okay, let's go.
Very interesting.
Really interesting, yeah.
Yeah, very cool. And then post-production, of course, right, which is where you really get to put the film together, right? That's where you tell the story editing, right?
Yeah, well, it's funny because this one's shot a very... Hulu shot it a very specific way. You want to explain a little bit?
Really? So you didn't have to do a lot of post-production?
We did. There's a lot of post-production.
There's a lot of post-production, you know, but putting the film together itself, we the film is told in very few shots. And that's all I'm going to say.
Really?
People should watch it. Yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
It adds to the intensity of the film.
So when you're thinking about, oh, there's a lot of action. There's a person getting, you know, falling from somewhere, and then you have to deal with that, and he's stalling very few shots. How do you do that? Watch the film. That's one of the beauties of the film.
Yeah.
And so putting the film together in that sense wasn't that didn't take that long. We knew what shots we wanted to use. To tell the story, you know. Then after that, sound and sound mix and color correction, mm-hmm. and that took a little bit of time because that's where the essence of the world also lies.
Yeah.
Right. So, and you guys made a couple of other films before this, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Were they also short films and everything? Is there anyone that you particularly proud of? That?
Well, I mean, I've been. Me and Julio, when we were in school together, we didn't collaborate in the same way we're doing now, but we were definitely helping out on each other's films. And so one of the times he brought me down to Peru to do his thesis film called Behind the Mirrors, which is a really great story about. It's another thriller about a murder that happens in Peru. There are hotels where people kind of go to have affairs, I guess, for lack of a better term, kind of a sex motel. And so there's a murder that happens here.
Oh, wow.
But then you have. There's somebody who has somebody who works there to try to make more money on the side, secretly kind of films these people through these mirrors that are in these things. So he uses those. But then when he captures this murder, he now gets put in this terrible spot of what to do. So it's a really great look into that stuff. And anyway, he brought me down. I was an AD and kind of an associate producer running around just kind of on the set. And it was fantastic. I remember that very clearly. We shot all nights. Yeah. In this crazy part of town, and
wow. So Peru has like sex hotels. I should go there sometime, right? Check it out for myself.
I don't think you need to go there for
no,
that.
Right?
No.
If you go there, just sit on the bed and look at the mirror, and then just make it very boring for everybody.
But you know what? That's what always freaks me out. Like in Airbnb or something. You know, you go, you stay at somebody somebody else's house. You don't know what where there's cameras. Where
you don't.
All that stuff, you know. So I'm very, even in hotels or let's say smaller hotels where the owner is there or something, nobody knows what's going on. Yeah. They could be filming you. They could be watching you. Yeah. You know, I mean, wow.
Yeah. We like to explore this, these worlds that are underground.
Yeah.
And make something out of it. Yeah. You know, it's usually morality tales where you have a man or a woman, you know, in these situations where they have to make ends meet, you know, and the only way they can do this is by doing this thing that goes against someone's morals.
Right, right.
So yeah, that's what we like to do. So and Lucas himself is a great director. He directed a few films. One of them that he shot in Germany, in Cologne, Germany, and premiering in Sundance.
Very cool. What was the name of the film?
It was called the film was called Spielzeit, but it's called Playtime in German.
Okay.
So,
wow.
Yeah, no, it was really fun. It was fun, and that's what's I think that's what's really been helpful in the dynamic is even Julio said it really best one time because we were on set and he goes, I said I don't want to get in your way, man. You know you got to do your thing, and he said, look, because I don't know how to give you notes like a producer. Like I'm just going to tell you what I think as a director. That's all I think about, or as a writer. And he just goes, Lucas, I trust you, so just tell me, and I'll just, you know, we'll just make the decision, you know, it'll be great. So he was just really, he's so accommodating, not accommodating, that's the wrong word, he's very collaborative. So people can come in and give them some things, and not overwhelmingly, but Julio is very calculated he has a broader vision, and we can throw a bunch of things out there, and that's kind of how writing goes as well. I can throw a bunch of things out there, and he can see kind of where we're going, and we can always steer that ship in the right way. And that's always, I think that's what's really, really fun.
Right.
It's like, I was like, let me think of another way that this could happen. And he's like, this is good. So we kind of worm our way into something even more interesting. So,
yeah. So you're a great team. I mean, I can see how you work together and everything. The film we're talking about is Desecho, which means debris. And we can, I guess, understand from the work site and everything, that's how it's probably related, you know. And, of course, Julio Ramos and Lucas Mireles. What do you guys planning now afterwards? Do you have another film in the works now?
How many? I don't know.
A few?
We have got a few, yes. Oh, wow. We've been developing a feature. Well, first of all, the long version of Debris, that's something that we've been working for the past year or two.
Yeah.
And
to make it into a feature?
Yes. To make it into a feature, yes, yes. On top of that, we're also developing feature films that take place in Peru. Takes place in Peru. We are something within the same genre of a thriller. You want to speak more about it?
Yeah, there's Julio. I've been to Peru a couple times, and it's a very fascinating country with an amazing political system. And me being part Mexican, I understand kind of. I don't really understand this, but I can feel a little bit of that idea of being colonized, and you know, like I said, I with my fair skin, I don't get any of that. I don't get any of that stuff,
yeah.
And I can just be upward and honest about it. But what I can understand is how people can speak to that, and then when you grow up in an area where 98% of everybody is Mexican American, you can get to understanding like this kind of weird agreement that people have with basically their colonizers, essentially, right? They're conquerors in a way, and. When we talk about Peruvian politics and Peruvian history, this kind of identity crisis with Peruvians is really interesting that Julio talks about, and one in which talks about the time of the Shining Path it was a time and place in Peru where the poor were raised up with political ideals to kind of take over this kind of class system, which was very interesting. And so this has been a big wealth of interesting. Of interest to me personally, and then to hear it from Julio, who's lived a little bit of that and knows a lot about it. It's been great.
Yeah, we're talking about the 80s, where the world was divided between red and green, you know, and so a lot of communist ideas, you know, flourish in the region, and
a lot of conflict, a lot of terrorism,
you know, terrorism, and they try to take over the country, you know.
Yeah. And it's duplicitous too. Like you could be a person in your family. Someone could be in the army. Someone can be with radicals, right?
Wow.
Like with
a shiny from the same family.
Yeah, and then you just see everybody crash together, and it can be very, it's very heartbreaking. But it's there's a lot of there's a, like such a wealth of just, I mean, just the stories we hear sound made up.
Yeah.
And they're just absolutely true. You know, just of the horrors that happen.
Well, so, we're looking forward to that too. You know,
I mean, when everything that we say, like, this horror of this and this horror of that.
Yeah. Well, we're looking forward to that though, because you guys are sound very talented and stuff, and very ambitious and very passionate about what you do. And that's, I think that's really what it takes, you know. So,
thank you.
Everybody, look for the film Debris. If you're in the industry, why don't you give it an Oscar? It probably deserves it.
Oh, man. Well, thank you. And like any day to tell a story is a great day for us. So any day we get to be able to tell a story or think of a great story to tell, that's a wonderful day we get to share. So.
That's awesome. Mm-hmm. Well, you guys are a great team. I'm envious of the fact that you have somebody that close that you can work with and everything. You know, that's amazing. So I thank you for joining us today.
Thank you.
And all the best to you. Continued success to you. And that's it, everybody. Thank you for listening. And we'll see you all tomorrow.
Listening to Sam in the Morning, only on LA Talk Radio.